Welcome to Syncifying Syncify. On the show, we find the best content on building your startup. We then sync up and explain our biggest lessons to you, the listener, and try to apply those learnings to our own startup, Syncify. We look at what we can do as a young startup, building the future of social audio, and give some insights into what really happens as you build an idea into an actual business. I'm Sam Harris, your host and the CEO of Syncify. Syncifying Syncify. We digest the best content around to teach ourselves and you how to build a great business. We then try and apply all the concepts to our own tech business, Syncify, which is all about listening to content together. Hence, we are Syncifying Syncify.
It's time.
Yeah. Hey, this is our first podcast face-to-face.
Yeah. Woo, high five. Physical contact.
This is way better. Because now I'm not going to feel bad at interrupting you when you go off on one, and you can actually interrupt me without like us both being kind of.
So for the listeners, it's going to be hell.
Yeah. There will be talking over each other.
There will be no finished point ever. One long tangent after another. Great.
Good. So what are we up to today, Sammy boy?
We are going to review and discuss the points from 0 to 1.
Would you say we're going to syncify 0 to 1?
Yes, we're going to syncify over 0 to 1.
Nice.
We're going to be syncified by the end of this, as is the name of the podcast.
Nice.
Good. So Peter Thiel, the author, cool guy. I've been watching some of his videos as well online. I'm a big fan. Don't know about you. Do you feel like you get into Peter Thiel's head, or are you kind of like?
I didn't like the audiobook because I'm really like energy, and the guy who read the audiobook was like. Like really, the guy who reads the Ryanair, like everyone sit down and listen, would have done a better job at the guy reading it. And I don't think there's any harm just because you're talking about technology or things that are very kind of, you know, entrepreneurial, etc., that you need to, or business minded, that you need to lose that energy. So it did take me some kind of sitting down and real focus to make sure I paid attention. But I don't know about the PayPal mafia very much apart from Elon, but I did some research on those guys afterwards, and I mean, they're incredibly impressive. Like that is some seriously cool resumes going on there.
He put a good team together.
Yeah, I think Palantir Technologies is actually one of the coolest things to as well, like some of the contracts that they actually got, which is Peter Thiel's company. I mean,
CIA, what?
yeah, some American contracts. But yeah, and I like that. I like that there was something so strong in place with whatever they had at PayPal that it manifested into each of them, because they couldn't have all been special joining. Maybe they were quite special, but PayPal itself and how they operated made each individual go on to be even better than they perhaps would have done if they'd have gone their own individual paths beforehand without seeing each other.
It's sort of like if you're a runner and you see the 4-minute mile, you know it can happen because you're a runner. But if you're a startup, you should know that people do these things, but it's not really the same as like being involved in it happening. Whereas if you're in a company and it goes like, there isn't really like this payment solution for the web. Oh, we'll build it. Okay, we're like this massive $1 billion company. Yeah, you're like, yeah. Oh, I can just kind of like invent things and like make it happen. And like, there isn't like a way to get good data on like terrorists for like the CIA. I'll just build the biggest data company and boom. Yeah. Yeah. We can't get to Mars yet. We should get to Mars. Yeah. That's a thing. Let's build that company.
I think that's one of the things, and I know we're going to go into it, but we can probably just break into it as we're talking about it anyway. But he did say that things in business only happen once. And I think that's something they all hold true. Like Elon Musk was like, I'm going to probably be the company where people end up going to Mars via whatever I build. And that's the kind of thing that only happens once, right? That is, you can't, once someone said that, it's weird if another person goes on and goes, well, I'm going to be doing that as well now. It's like, well, no, he just said it. That's what he wants to do. And they like all must have been thinking about, well, there's no point in creating a company that's going to be competing with others. Let's just create the best possible one for whatever culture we're going in.
Which is the point of the book, 0 to 1. Yeah. It's about not making incremental improvements on what's there. It's about defining an entire new industry and not competing with others. So taking like a naught where there is nothing that does what you're doing and creating a one Whereas if there's like numbers of space shuttles going to Mars and you decide to launch a new one, you're like 1.1 or whatever.
Yeah.
Though he does say like another way of doing it is like being completely 10x like better or something. So like the Apple iPad, there were other things around, but they kind of like they invented that because they made it so much better. Yeah.
Same as Google Search.
Yeah, exactly.
Same as Facebook. I mean, they just did so many things that were crazy.
If you can do something that almost monopolizes because it's so good.
Yeah.
So like other things do deliver stuff online when you buy them, but Amazon have kind of monopolized the market kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's mental to think how... If you imagine when Yahoo was around and Google came into the market, you think, well, there's Yahoo. And then Google were like, hold my search engine. This is what I'm going to be inventing now. This is where we're going to do it. And of course, when you build something like Google and you get so... when you actually monopolize, which I'm not sure how legal that is to the fact they have managed to monopolize so. But what they do is they're then able to innovate with things like Google Glass and self-driving vehicles. Because they don't need to worry about... Yeah, they don't need to worry about doing other stuff. They end up acquiring and innovating.
Yeah, so he does talk about monopolies being a good thing, because when you're in competition, you actually might pay staff less, you're like competing for customers and all these things, whereas when you kind of just, you're making oodles of money and you're delivering the best thing, you can focus on just giving the customer better and better things and really grow and innovate. So it's sort of a contrarian view there. So I don't know if this is a good point to go on to. So we spoke about the 0 to 1, and the other main point that he makes really is having contrarian views.
Yeah.
So he basically says like their favorite interview question is asking people what they believe that most of the world doesn't believe. Mm. And he goes on to say that basically companies have like a giant secret that is a contrarian view where they think that you can do something that no one else is doing. And, that's where you like create the value. And so a lot of his views, he says, are kind of contrarian. So like we were just saying around like competition is a bad thing, and like he's saying monopolies are a good thing. He also talks about he's just quite against like a lot of the lean startup methodology, where it says it's much better to be like a bold company rather than sort of one that kind of fits in and you can just sort of make it. So like lean startup is more about building a company that doesn't die, where he's more about like building a company that will like last forever. And so just go like completely out there or sort of fail fast, like a bit more. He's also saying like a bad plan is better than none.
So you
should have like a bigger vision and a plan behind it to get to
What do you think about that? Because you're pretty strategic.
Because I'm quite, well, I'm still kind of lean startup. I avoid writing down a plan if I have to stick to something that I think I'm going to change like next week, if it's sort of, my plans might be as go as far as like work out what happens next week and then sort of, okay, I could have like 10 different options after that. So you should actually have like 8 plans. And I'm not sure I always have time to do that. So if I'm busy coding and like, that's the most important thing is to build a feature. I don't want to waste my time planning when I already kind of have all this stuff in my head just to like show someone else what's in my plan. But like you obviously have to have some form of plan in your head at least.
But I think the really good way of doing it, and I'm one of someone who thinks a bad plan is better than no plan at all. I think having some kind of, because I need structure, otherwise I tend to flap and I tend to go broadly speculate. And you've probably already seen it already with me where if I don't have like, okay, do this, I'll be thinking, well, but what about this other thing that is to do with the thing that we're thinking about a little bit? And I'd say that one of the things that really helps, which he doesn't actually mention, is this North Star metric is, if you have that goal, that light at the end of the tunnel, like we want to connect more people healthily, or whatever ours is going to be, if you can say, well, that's the overall arching plan, all the little things you put in place, as long as they're heading towards that, that's probably the best way. That's probably the best way to do it. And that's an easier way to just kind of make sure, like if you're coding something and then you're looking like, okay, is this going to benefit the user and help towards doing that? It's probably, if it's not, then it's probably not going to be worth doing, right?
Yeah. Definitely.
But he just, he's a little bit against that idea.
No, I thought he's with that idea.
No, he's unplanned. He thinks about not being planned is better. He's like, he thinks planning is slightly arrogant and inflexible.
I read it the other way around, that like lean startup was like...
This isn't lean startup, though. This is...
Yeah, so he was the opposite, so that was his contrarian view.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is where we get confused.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure So yeah, and so like he had the contrarian view being like, don't compete, and his final of four was that like sales strategy still matters, whereas like Lean Startup and Y Combinator all like, it's only ever product, only ever product.
Yeah,
don't think about sales. So but he's saying like, actually, you do need some strategy to sell because.
So I wrote down stay lean and flexible, and he actually said a bad plan is better than no plan. Whereas, so I've got them mixed up. Yeah, fair enough. I'm the worst guy ever. We should talk about my continuance with Syncify.
Yeah. Can't even make notes on a book. Probably not that useful.
God damn it, Jack. One job. You can tell that's mine. Is my one at the top there because it keeps going crazy?
No, that's mine.
Oh, really? You're going to be way louder than me, though. Boo.
No, I mean, they look about the same levels.
Boo.
Yeah, I mean, boo. If you're going to just start doing, like, beatboxing into the mic,
then... I'm getting a little bit loopy.
Yeah.
We interrupt this podcast to bring you some sync beats.
Yeah. Whoa.
Pun. Got it in there. Nice. All right. I'm so much more enjoying this.
Good. I think that is our North Star metric now, is how many puns can Jack put in an email.
Oh, I'm getting better.
It's getting better.
Slowly but surely. You know, you're trying to think of a pun about emails, aren't you?
No.
No. Yeah.
Stop. Now.
Stop. Yeah. There's no email puns. I couldn't think of any. All right. Let's move forward onto the next one. Oh, no. Let's move forward.
Okay, yeah, sure.
You can reply to me later, that one.
Yeah, I was going to say I'll reply all, but like, anyway.
I can't see us moving on.
Yeah. Right. New subject. So Peter Thiel has 7 questions in his book that he thinks every company should answer. And
they are...
Yes, they are the engineering question. So, are you truly innovative? Are you like 10 times better? Do you have some amazing like source code or something that's just out of this world? Number 2, the timing question. Is this going to be, are you entering like an existing market that already has products in it? Or is it like a slow moving market or a fast moving one? So like Facebook launched at like the perfect time, just as broadband was starting to make it easier to browse on your phones and things. And they kind of just about took over sort of the general market of before people were on their phones, as like the iPhone launched. And then 3 years later, as Facebook was just about like the biggest.
Yeah.
At a time when like social media then suddenly exploded as people were able to use it a lot more on their phones. Mm. So you can't even always know in advance. But like if PayPal had started maybe 2 years earlier, they could have failed because they'd started too early. If they started 2 years later, they might have been too late, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so timing can be really hard.
Oh, because PayPal attached itself to eBay, whose process that was failing was people sending literal checks to one another to pay for things. So it was 10 times faster and 10 times better. So
then there's the monopoly question, as we've spoken about, like Peter Thiel believes it's a good thing. So can you create a monopoly and avoid competition so you can just focus on innovating? Number 4, the people question. So a lot of innovation is about just the quality of people that you have in the culture. So if you want to be 10 times better, you probably have to have the engineers to do it. Number 5, the distribution question. So just because you've got like great taste.
You missed out the timing question, by the way.
We spoke about the timing question with the whole Facebook timing and social media. That we spoke about that for a while.
Did we?
Yeah.
That was a monopoly question.
No.
God.
That
damn
was
it.
After the timing question.
Really?
Yeah, where we just spoke about
we just
molded
them both together. Okay.
No, I just said the monopoly question.
Ignore me.
Yeah, okay, good.
That's my notes.
Yes. So we got onto the distribution question. So you may believe that your technology speaks for itself and people are just going to buy it, whatever. But you need to have a good distribution channel and a way to get close to your customer so they can experience it and like get advantage or take advantage of it and hear about it. The durability question. So you should plan to be the last mover on the market, but what does the market look like in 10 years or 20 years time? And how will your solution be dominating the space with like all the differences that are going to happen? And what possible competition could you be facing? Like, could China make it cheaper, or will the customer still be ready to pay for something like this when actually like broadband is now free or something, or all these kind of things? Then the final question is the secret question. So all great companies are built upon finding answers to secrets. It's the heart of innovation, and secrets are problems which have an answer, but nobody's figured it out yet. So if you think of great companies that have solved a problem for customers in new ways, so Airbnb on Uber, they kind of did something that was just completely there, but just hidden in front of your eyes. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you want to have a big secret like that you can uncover.
Mm. Voila. Now, should we answer these questions about ourselves?
We can try. That would be the point.
Okay. So I think he said you don't need to nail them all, but you want to have a good few of them that are, you know, you're pretty going to smash it on. I think he gave the example of the distribution question, that a better place, which was this electrical vehicle startup, it had the technology but failed to market to its customers in the right way. So, you know, they end up with a company bombing in 2013. They kind of admitted that they overcame all the technical obstacles, but failed totally in the distribution one. So you can almost see that you kind of need to have, if you have the distribution one, it's probably important that you have a very decent, like technical solution to go with it. Like those two have to go hand in hand. Yeah. But going back to, so the first one being the engineering question. Now it's a really weird one for us, I think, because what we're saying in their terminology, we said like Apple's iPad was 10x better than the previous tablets, and PayPal was 10x better than selling than the check system, and you know, Google 10x better. So for us to answer that question, we aren't really necessarily going to be 10x better than the next podcast.
Well, I think
player,
this links
right?
into the final question of the secret. So I'd say from an engineering perspective, our code, I don't see how it's going to be 10 times better than other podcast players in that sense. But in terms of the secret, I think what humans are lacking at the moment is a way to experience doing things together, and that Facebook and normal social media doesn't satisfy that, but people spend a lot of time doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the opposite is that we spend also lots of time doing podcasts, listen to podcasts and books, but we don't socialize around those, which is where we should be doing it.
Yeah.
So I think the secret is the way we're doing it, which is making what we're doing 10 times better.
Exactly. So that's what I was going to go on and say. It's not like we're improving 10x on something. It's the fact there isn't currently a workable solution around what we're suggesting. I mean, there is no, the socializing of audio isn't in existence. So it's like engineering wise, we're not going to be doing something 10x, but we're also going to be building potentially the first one to do what we want to do in a substantially good way.
In the same way that Airbnb is in, like, you can go and stay with your mates' houses if they've got a spare room, or you can go and stay in a hotel, but wait, there's loads of people with spare rooms who actually you could go and stay with, in like, you're suddenly just uncovering a thing that's been in front of you the whole time, but you just couldn't actually do it. Yeah. And so, like, I feel that's what we're doing with, like, oh, I could actually be socializing with the stuff I tell you.
Yeah. So it was an interesting question for us, but we kind of skirted it a little bit, but I think that's fair because we're not.
Well, no, not really. As in, like, I wouldn't say Airbnb started off with 10 times better engineering or anything. I mean, now they are like pretty high bar on like the code that they build, but when they started, they're just some designers and they got some guys to make a shit website for them.
Yeah.
So as in, like, we'd aim to make some pretty amazing class code once we've got some more money and stuff.
Yeah. Well, I don't really. Oh, it's raining. When you talk to me about code, like, I understand that there are levels to this game when it comes to it, and the joy that I will get when you turn around and be like, "I have absolutely no idea what our engineers are doing," I'll be like, "Jeez, that must mean we're doing something right." And then when we're like, just insanely growing around some other thing in a market that we just had never thought about, then it might turn around and be like, God, who have we got doing our PR or something like that kind of thing. But yeah, solution wise is, I think you can aim for it. I think there's no harm in aiming to be the best at that kind of stuff. Okay, next one, the timing question. So, you know, are you entering an existing market with the product? Is it a slow-moving market or a fast-moving one?
So it's a hugely growing market. I think podcasts has been growing a lot recently, and other audiobooks, and and the bigger economic trends of people realizing they're starting to waste a lot of money going to university and these things, or people that are doing jobs but want to train up and go into something else faster. So, like, the whole learning and like in your spare time thing is hugely growing, and like I've been saying with social media, it's been like a huge thing, but suddenly lots of people are starting to dislike the way it works and realizing that it's not healthy for them and thinking that there's better ways to do it. So I think the timing of these are like definitely at inflection points that are about to change. So I think there's three huge things that are like hitting us perfectly, along with also like the rise of Apple AirPods and things like that, that are just making people listen to these things more. So yes, that's a good thing. I would personally have felt a lot better if we'd started a year ago. I mean, I had the idea like 9 years ago, and I would have started it a year ago if I'd been a better coder, or if maybe I'd spoken to Eamon a bit more about it, because I think I spoke to him a little bit later and he's like, this is such a great idea. We'll get to textiles. I'm like, yeah, but is it not a little bit late by sort of September 2020? Jeez. But I did it anyway. So yeah, I'm just worried like it's like a little bit late. It's fine.
Okay.
I believe.
Okay.
But otherwise, I think trend-wise, it's definitely on point.
Yeah. It's in terms of timing, it's one of those things. Have you heard about the, I think I can't remember, it's called the famine philosophy, or like, it's the way of thinking. People aren't starting podcasts because they think there's already too many podcasts out there. And in actual fact, you've got to think that it was only last year, I think, that a whole podcast industry turned over 850 million. And I know we are not exclusively going to be a podcasting or anything kind of app. It's just the beginning place for us. But when you consider, as he mentioned in that one, it's going to be even more now, that the sales when he was writing this book in 2014, 15, I think it was, the sales industry there was 480 billion. And it's probably must be approaching a trillion or something now, I'd say, when you look at the things of Salesforce. So in terms of the growth that's yet to come from podcasting, and I think we can firmly say there is no dominant podcasting app. There's bloatware like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So we know 19% of people listen to Spotify, and we've got 54% of people listen to through Apple Podcasts, and then it's like Stitcher and various other platforms. But we are really at the cusp of something that's going to grow. I think you're completely right. There are, due to coronavirus as well, people are looking at their university applications and thinking like, well, I'm not even going to get bloody well go to university in September, am I? And I'm definitely one of them. I didn't go to university when I studied English and drama to go and learn more about Shakespeare. I'd done the guy for years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how much have you learned about how to run a business in the past 3 months from reading books and
etc.? Just doing that, or like from joining Sweatcoin and working the people there in the last. I mean, I would never have done that. And then so carrying those skills from there to here, if someone could have told me, hey, you don't need to go to university, you can just, or degree, no one's actually going to care about that by the time you're in your mid to late 20s anyway. If you could just have all this information for you ready online, you can just listen to it. Yeah. And people are being turned to be able to listen to it. So for more ways than one, where we are is perfect timing. I don't think we could have better timing unless we start at the same time as Spotify. But then podcasts are just people in their rooms. There was only about 100 of them.
Yeah. Well, there's other things we could have been doing back then as well, like music and stuff. Anyway, the other thing I would add to the timing is also the other trend I didn't mention is that like a lot of people are experiencing less ads in terms of they're watching Netflix or they're not watching TV as such, or they're not reading newspapers. So they're seeing lots of ads in other places, but they're like on social media less. But if they are listening to a lot of podcasts, they are more like open to listen to these things, and like they actually sort of, you know, you listen to Joe Rogan and you know that he uses like this new massage gun, and you're like, actually, yeah, maybe I need a massage gun. It sounds great. Yeah. He's buff. I should be buff. And
I wonder how many people started steroids because of Joe Rogan or TRT. He's always talking about it. Like, and I want to go on
TRT. Actual steroids?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He takes like testosterone replacement therapy, human growth hormone. That's a steroid. He takes a bunch of these things, and obviously he has like incredibly expensive doctors. But you got to think, since this kind of thing came available, like podcasting, you just wouldn't have known that.
No. Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Sam's thinking about moving
on from steroids.
Yeah, Sam and I are not on steroids yet.
Contrarian viewpoint, it's good to be on steroids.
We both go bald and get huge and veiny. Yeah. It's like, what happened to this, guys? Nothing.
Anyway. The next question is the monopoly question. Can you be a monopoly? So, it feels like we kind of would need to be. Really? So,
yeah.
As in, if we can get in and be the first social podcasting app where everyone goes, actually, yes, we want to be listening to podcasts socially, then yes, we're kind of a monopoly because everyone has to be there. So if it works right, it should be super viral because you should get your friends on there and...
It's an interesting one because we are a social podcasting app. So we are a social place where you are able to do one thing, key thing, and that is listen to the same things as your friends and network at the same time or a different time, according whatever time you want, right? Yeah. So to say,
that's the first sell, but like there's other things that are useful.
But of course, but in terms of being a monopoly, Facebook doesn't say, oh, we are, like their whole thing is we are a social media. Spotify is we are an audio, like a home of audio. So we can't say we can't be a monopolize those two or one of those two markets. But what we can do is we can be the monopoly of the middle ground that doesn't currently exist. We are the place that exists between those, which in itself is a whole entity that's not been explored properly yet. And that's potentially what we can monopolize. And as those two giants try and feed into being more social or do other things, we're hoping that we're going to be a bit.
Well, we're saying that there's going to be a new industry that is a social podcast industry, and we're going to own it. Yes. The same way that there didn't used to be an industry for staying at people's like spare rooms.
Yeah. We are creating an industry. Yeah. But it's the same as the engineering question that we said at the beginning. We're creating something. We don't need to be 10x better because we're creating a new space.
But the point is, can it be monopolized, I guess? And we think that it can be.
Yeah.
Because if you do it like inherently it's social, it should make sense. It's just if someone comes along and does it better.
But what we've got to be careful of is one of the sentences he said was exaggerating your own uniqueness is an easy way to botch the monopoly question. So us being super like saying, well, no one's doing it. Yeah, we're going to be, it's like, come on, we just have to be, but no one is doing it amazing yet because both you and I would be on it. We would definitely be on it, but we're not on it yet.
I mean, the amount of times I'm trying to share podcasts with you.
Yeah,
and such,
exactly. And... yeah. The amount of times I try and ignore you as well. Aha. Yeah. Okay. So the next one is the people question. So, in guess like in searching of the innovation, it's a lot about the quality of the people and the culture you have and kind of finding a technical advancement, which is way better, means having engineers and technical people to do it. And so one of the main things is like, and you have to ask yourself, is you have the right people capable of working on real product innovations? Do you have the people to pursue the product in the market? Do you have the people to bring everyone in house? Do you have the people who are going to be like the absolute burning fire that's going to get everyone motivated and have that real resonance of an awesome startup? Oof. Well, I think
let's move on for this question.
Yeah, so that's a no.
So we've got two idiots that can't speak properly without going off
on tangents.
And
it's raining.
But no, we can do stuff.
This is
good.
Here's the thing. This is what I think, right? I'm just going to go for it. I think you and I are so different and really good at the stuff that we are good at.
Yeah.
But my blind spots are so massive. I think your blind spots are massive.
Yeah,
but
I think...
there's just this middle ground that we are like the sum of both that. There's hermeneutics and circularity. We are both the sum of our own parts and then kind of together...
I think together we're pretty strong, but we're missing. I'm not super fast at tech, and I think if we had another tech co-founder, I would be a lot less stressed.
Yeah.
And I think that, as in, like you're saying, you do really well with people with having like a big plan ahead of you, and I'm sort of a bit opposite. So as I'm the kind of the leader, I haven't always been tracking you and I haven't given you like a metric. So it's only just recently that where we've actually been like, okay, this is what Jack should be getting done each week. And this has taken us a bit of a while to do that because I've been a bit more focused on like, I know what I need to do. I need to build features. That's about it. And I'm not that good. So I'm spending all of my time doing it.
Yeah.
Whereas I should be doing a bit more like at the managing side of it. And I kind of shy away from that.
Yeah. I think one of the things with that is you are, so you're founder CEO, which is something that we talk about in Ben Horowitz's book that we'll probably do next time. So you're founder CEO. And I think one of the best parts, and also it's like a, it's a, the silver lining to the cloud, let's say, is that you're learning on the job. You've never been a CEO before. Not in the same way as this. This is a different kind of. You can't say Pedal Power is anything like Syncify or App Agency is not. You're not gonna. Come on. This is like the first proper founding CEO. Would you argue that? Where you've had other people and you've had people like stand-ups and you've had people going to form different parts of business and investment talks and potentially entering to accelerators. Oops.
Well,
come on.
I did speak about investment a bit with Pedal Power and other things and other people on the job and
it's different things.
But yeah, it's certainly.
This is like, you know, if that was something you were a true fan of, you probably would have done more with it or you'd have got more excited about it. What I'm saying is this is like you are not like the senior exec financier. So, but there's the thing: you can A, learn on the job, and no one's going to punish for you until we have like a board and we have insane targets. Or like I say, Sam, you're actually not delivering in the bits that you should be delivering in. But the second part, you will build your CEO profile as Syncify itself. Like those two are going to be synonymous with each other. And that's a really, really good thing because at later stages, after like 4 or 5 years, if you want to step away or something, there might be like a CEO who comes in who's run other really crazy, massive companies. So don't be like, you're going to end up in that position anyway. Yeah, so yeah. Enjoy the bit
I need to start spending more of my time unblocking other people and making sure that they can work on what they need to work on as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And less of my time working on my own work, which is sort of where I'm natural. I don't really like telling people what to do too much. I kind of like letting people do stuff. So yeah, I guess that's more of my issue. And I've generally only ever worked in small teams, whether I've ran the team or not. Everyone sort of had their own role and it's been quite defined and been pretty easy.
Yeah.
And I'd say by the nature of that company, we could try and stay as lean as possible. But if we find a gap in the market or we accelerate in one way that we weren't supposed to, we're going to have, or that we didn't anticipate, the chance of a scaling a team in the next year or two, that's the thing. You can either choose to embrace that role as being someone who has their hands in loads of things and then be like that active CEO who's on the money and has these relationships with everyone who's in charge. But that might not be the best fit for what you want to do. That might be something I step into and you kind of be like, look, I need to do the vision stuff. I need you to be like troops on the ground sort of vibe.
Was planning to like, yeah, we're getting you into some of those things, but I do expect that I'm going to have to do a lot of that. But that's just talking about us. So far we've got two other people.
Oh yeah. Let's talk
about.
Got
a new hire.
Boo, 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 boo. His name is Benga.
Yeah.
He's not a showgirl.
Okay, good. That's not weird. Anyway. Yeah. He can code. That's the important part.
Yeah, and he's lovely.
Pretty good.
Which I care about.
Makes everybody smile.
Yeah.
So engineering is happening. And don't think we've messed up on that hire. So
no,
this is good.
No. And Perry likes him as well.
Yeah. And yeah, we're hoping to get some more people onboarded into doing tech.
Maybe.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
Some maybes. But if they don't happen, we'll have to onboard someone else as well instead.
I think so.
Yep. And then we also have Perry, who is the genius putting this, who's hopefully making us sound less stupid than we're actually sounding as we record this.
Yeah. And cut out that waffle that I just went on for about 2 minutes ago, where I was like trying to backhand praise you and just be like, don't put so much pressure on yourself, which was what I was trying to say. But
that's nice.
It ended up me coming up like, you know, this kind of.
Yeah. But you're a bit weird and not good at everything. So.
Mine aren't blind spots, they're tunnels, so it's fine. But answering the people question is, I think being aware that there are things that we need.
Yeah, there's
one
lots
of, the best,
of stuff we need to put in.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. I liked the way that he talked about when it came to when he's on doing investments and stuff like that. He said when companies were pitching clean tech to him, loads of them were like men in suits, and he said that was a huge red flag because real technologists wear t-shirts and jeans, and so he created this blanket rule of like pass any company who dressed up for like pitch meetings in suits, because if you and I went into if we started wearing suits, we'd be so uncomfortable. We'd be like, I've seen what you dress up to weddings, young man. I'm like, I mean, you are like a, you are literally the tech startup entrepreneur person. You climb, you eat sparingly and often, and you are like the traditional kind of the quintessential startup person.
Yeah,
but that's good because we are like we're kind of who we are in terms of what we're in terms of the company as well. We're not trying to like smarten ourselves up or be perfect. It's like we believe in what we're doing strong enough that we don't need to start like trying to impress in these stupid aesthetic ways.
Yeah, I definitely wear clothes for function.
You right? Sometimes wear clothes. No, that's good. You sometimes do wear clothes. But yeah, great. Question 5 for you.
The distribution question.
Indeedy.
So obviously you can get us on the App Store, but then how are you going to find out about us and why we're there? This is distribution. So you don't want to be doing lots of paid marketing as such straight away. So hypothetically, the app will be viral because if it's a social podcast app and you're on there and it's great, but you're like, wouldn't it be great if my friends are on here? They'll have so much fun. They'll be able to see what my favorite podcasts are and listen to them with me, and you'll invite everybody. And then like it'll distribute itself via like our links through to WhatsApp, etc. But Jack says no head of growth.
But to assume that the main function and the main growth is going to be peer-to-peer kind of gets away the fact that we know that socially people like connecting with people that they don't know a lot of the time. They like learning and talking to people with people they have nothing in common with apart from this new thing, which is why when you go climbing, you've met those new people and you've abandoned me essentially and created new friends. Not mad at all. That's fine, you know, whatever.
True. But like, I mean, I have also tried to invite you to come climbing.
I do too many things. Too busy.
Yeah, I know.
but that's the thing. We to assume people are going to invite their friends who we assume are going to be podcasting. There needs to be people interested in the subjects, and Syncify has to find a way that the subjects and communities.
If all you ever doing was listening to MMA podcasts,
I
wouldn't really be bothered anyway.
Exactly.
To listen with you.
Yeah, that's the thing. But if there was UFC community on there or an MMA community on there, then I don't need other people. So yeah, peer to peer, but also networks need to grow themselves. We need to target 2 or 3 main networks, which are attractive enough to build and grow.
Like Reddit, where people like gather around content and interesting things. But they have the discussions there, but could they have like some of those discussions?
Yeah.
That's the thing. And I think I mean to say that we're not going to be quite similar to Reddit in a few ways is you know, I mean,
we've got a lot to learn from the way Reddit works.
And I think it's fantastic, and I love the way that the communities are moderated as well. It's very, very healthy, and the people just if someone's going like trying to promote or whatever, it's just down. They are downvoted to like nothing, and they comment it like, hey, didn't like that comment much, huh? Seeing as I've been downvoted to like hell or something like that, which is quite good. But it's the thing is, you can't cheat a distribution platform like Apple unless you run search ads. You can't do the same with Google Play Store. You are in competition against other people who will have natural organic growth of 50, 60, 70,000 downloads a day. The only way you get to the top of those kind of things is by building an amazing product that people want to share or discover. That is the nature of viral productivity and product virality. That's the two things come and go hand in hand, which I can explain to you and go on for ages, which I won't do now, but yeah. Let's not do it. So yeah, that's distribution. Okay.
Durability.
Yeah. So
it's an interesting
you
one.
Should plan to be the last move in your market. And what does the market look like in 10 or 20 years? And will your solution dominate the space? And what possible competition could you face? Can China come along, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. So that is one thing, obviously, always China. If we think that it's just the podcasting social space, just straight up, it's going to be a thing, then obviously it's going to happen in China as well, the same way that like they've got like WeChat and things. But then going more 10, 20 years in the future, will podcasting be the same as it is? I don't really think so. I think sharing experiences will be huge. Like the way social media works currently would just be such a relic. And I think when we have like VR experiences that we could just go and play like ping pong on the top of like Mount Everest together and like really cool stuff, just to like catch up as friends, And I think the way we experience things will be so much more in touch with each other. Mm-hmm. So some of the things that we are doing, like, okay, when you're at work, you will know what your like spouse is doing, whether she's also at work and you should listen to like similar things at the same time. Yeah. Or maybe she's off doing a run, but you want to know her vital signs while she's running on this mountain and all these things. Like, there's lots of like creepy stuff that's going to be going on, but people will be so much more in sync. Yeah. And like, in the same way that like, you wouldn't go anywhere without a mobile phone now. It seems kind of weird and dangerous.
Oh, it freaks me out when my dad does
like
that.
20 years ago, like, what would you do with a mobile
phone?
There's
not going to be a lot of mystery, is there? There's not going to be a lot of mystery. So I think sorry to interrupt, but I think the point you're making is that like Syncify itself, we are going to continue much the way that, you know, Facebook is a brand and it's growing into so many different things. What you're saying is that Syncify is going to stand for so much more because we're going to be a verb, and that verb itself is going to translate into a bunch of different things that are to do with connecting and being connected with each other in the future.
As in my head, we're basically the non-invasive version of Neuralink.
Yeah, and I saw that coming. I was waiting for you to say Neuralink. You're not obsessed with it at all.
We're not going to put like a brain net around you
to
like let all your thoughts share, but like everything besides that you can do to sort of actually let people know your thoughts and like how you're feeling and everything is sort of where I'm going.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to think about it from the perspective of the user and to make sure that is something that
in a nice way. As in, like, the things that you don't need to see is, and my mum knows every time I get horny, that's a bit weird. Exactly. But like other things, fine.
Because now when it's built, you won't have to call her and tell her anymore.
Yeah. Thanks, Jack. That is racking up my phone bills, damn it.
Sam, I don't want this anymore. This is not the kind of relationship. You've been hanging out with Jack too much.
She has complained about some of my podcasts. I'm like, Sam, why do you talk about sex? Like, what are you talking about sex? I was like,
that thing that you told me about the podcast with the, no, I'm not going to say that again.
Yeah, that didn't actually get published.
That's good. I'm glad that didn't get published.
Our podcast version maybe got published.
We haven't listened to it yet.
Episode 6.
I think that one of the
back
points,
to durability.
Yeah, one of the main points that was made was so clean tech and its failure. What it did is relied on governments of subsidies and backing, which isn't necessarily a durable path, because if that is something that you're relying on solely to exist, you've got to think that that's not going to happen, because the cogs that need to move in order for the government to start doing that involve going at serious lobbying power at the time. You're talking about billions of basic government funds that are coming to like through the Republican Party or wherever. It's like, oh, by the way, we're going to go clean energy now. They're like, no, you're not. We got into power. You're not doing that, you moron. And you're like, oh, okay. So in order to be durable over a period of time, and as Sam, you're saying in terms of growing in these different areas, we have to get to a point like Google where they innovate their own product to make it as good as possible, but we innovate our own idea into different things, which allows us to offer so many other things.
Yeah. Even though I think like 95, some ridiculous percentage of their money comes from just like ads through Google, and yet they do so many other things that hardly contribute to their bottom line, but just to sort of keep you in their world of Google so that you, when you are doing a thing that matters to them, you're doing it there.
Yeah.
And so they're constantly adding value to you in every other way possible.
Yeah. It's
but in terms of like, just because you're around doesn't mean you're like hyper successful anyway. So, you know, and this isn't me casting aspersions at Castbox, but Castbox have been around. No, it's not Castbox. It's Stitcher. Stitcher have been around for a long time. I think it's like 11 or 12 years, something now. And their turnover is 75 million. That's a huge amount of money. They're a really successful, massive company. But you would think that a company who started 10 or 11 years ago in a space that was absolutely blossoming.
Considering like, how much the podcast industry has grown in those 12 years.
Do you count that as a durable company, or do you count that as a company that is just, it continues to exist in a very good and healthy way?
Let's say they were an ETF company.
Yeah.
They would be like below the market rate by like 20% year on year kind of thing. And you'd be like, why the hell?
Yeah. Some would argue they're just the equivalent of like the podcasting of Spotify. That's not that's not true, because you would have still grown to be a market leader had certain things gone a different way. There I am, like, slapping in like 75 million turnover a year. That's still serious. It's still like a $300 million, $400 million company, but you'd expect to be more. Cool. And the last question, the secret question, which we kind of alluded to at the beginning. And so all great companies are built upon finding answers to these secrets. This is like the heart of the innovation, and secrets are problems which have an answer, but nobody has figured out yet. So the likes of Pythagoras discovered the secrets to the triangle, Newton discovered the secrets to gravity, and NASA figured out how to land humans on the moon. And these are the big secrets, but every company and product solves a problem for the customer in a new, previously unknown. Think Airbnb and Uber. Does your innovation uncover a secret which solves a fundamental problem for the customer? Sam, does it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, cool. And on that bombshell.
Good. Okay, that was a long
nice intro there, right?
Yeah, thanks.
No, didn't
enjoy it. Was my favorite.
What?
It's sort of the same words that I'd already said.
Yeah, but I was giving it some energy.
I guess. That was nice.
Oh, I was about to do such a good pun.
Oh, well, like, now's a good time.
I was gonna give it my own feel.
Hey. Good.
Teal.
Yeah, I get it. I don't know if anyone else did. I'm sure they did. Yeah, some people are just like face slapping themselves. Others just like, who is this?
How many people is hello? DM me if you're still listening.
Don't. Please don't.
Yeah, just get loads of crap.
No. Okay, to his head. Anyway, secret question. Yeah, so as I outlined, I think quite a few companies have started saying they're social podcasting apps and just haven't seemed to uncover the social part of it. They're kind of that you sort of follow people, but not really done anything that makes it feel social in any way. So I think we kind of are hitting that, and it's just something that hasn't really been done yet, which is sort of a bit of a secret. And then I think also their long-term goals, like some have got some of the features that we've got, but they just don't have the same goals. So I think one started that kind of scared by, but they're more focusing on like podcasters in being able to commercialize their audience and stuff. And I think there's a few people that are sort of in the right area but not focusing on quite the right thing. So for now, I still feel like it's a bit of a secret. I don't think it's going to stay a secret for long.
I think what's useful when it comes to this kind of thing is you look at the durability question, because we're trying to solve an answer that's potentially quite far into the future, because people still don't realize that social media is failing them. They still look at it as connection.
Yeah, definitely. Realizing it. I guess I was sort of alluding to more like just the social podcasting section, but I am more talking about like the social, as in just the way people are going to be social online is just going to change. Yeah, and I think COVID did make that a lot more obvious, which is a bit annoying because I already knew it. And then like suddenly everyone was like, oh, Netflix party, let's start doing these things. I'm like, don't do this too fast. I'm not ready. I haven't built my solution yet. Like, I know this is what the world needs, but like, stop. COVID, go away. Yeah. Damn it.
Yeah, I think it's. Yeah, I don't know.
So. Yeah. Okay. Good. But yeah, I think the way we're social is just changing inherently, and we're sort of building that, and that's sort of a bit of a secret that people haven't always realized. Cool. And that's that.
That was my favorite one to date. Love that one. It's nice. Good to be in the room.
Fuck
with you.
Fuck you, Y Combinator. We're on Techstars now.
Shh, can't say that yet.
It won't be released until like.
Yeah, but what if we?
Maybe if Perry releases.
I like Michael Siebel and those guys.
Yeah, no, they're
Mark Trotsky, whatever his name is. Yeah. I don't even think that's his name. God damn it. Dustin.
I don't know.
Okay, I like you, Y Combinator people. So don't listen to Sam. Sam doesn't like you, but I do.
I like Y Combinator.
No, he doesn't.
Too.
He's told me, actually.
I read all of their blogs.
I will invest in Y Combinator.
Good.
Anyway.
Yeah,
cheers, guys. Love that.
Thanks.
Bye.